listening to Para X.
All music used on the Black Cat Lounge is done so with the grateful permission of the artist.
Boys are Bonnie, 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 boys, Bonnie, mad boys, Bonnie, mad boys, Bedlam boys are Bonnie. To see Mad Tom on Bedlam, 10,000 miles of travel. Mad Maudlin goes on dirty toes to keep his shoes from gravel. Still I sing Bonnie boys, Bonnie, mad boys, Bedlam boys are Bonnie. For they all go bare and they live by the air and they want no drink nor money. I went down to Satan's kitchen for to get me food. All on the spit turning. Still I sing Bonnie boys, Bonnie mad boys, Birdland boys are Bonnie. For they all go bare and they live by the air and they want no drink nor money. My staff has murdered giants, my bag a big knife carries to cut mince pies from children's thighs with which to feed the fairies. Still I sing Bonnie boys, Bonnie mad boys, Birdland boys are Bonnie. For they all go bare and they live by the air and they want no drink nor money. Bonnie boys, Bonnie mad boys, Bedlam boys are Bonnie. For they all go bare and they live by the air and they want no drink nor money. Still I sing Bonnie boys, Bonnie mad boys, Bedlam boys are Bonnie. For they all go bare and they live by the air and they want no drink nor money. Bonnie, Bonnie, boys, Bonnie, mad boys, Bonnie, mad boys, Bedlam boys are Bonnie. Bonnie, Bonnie, boys, Bonnie, mad boys, Bonnie, mad boys, Bedlam boys are Bonnie. Bonnie, Bonnie, boys, Bonnie, mad boys, Bonnie, mad boys, Bedlam boys are Bonnie.
Lounge. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Black Cat Lounge, and it's another live edition. Can you dig that? We are just, like, having a time of our lives. And you know what? Oh, I forgot to mention, I am your most congenial host, as always, Tim Shaw. And tonight, I'm going to tell you what. This is going to be a cool, cool, cool show. We're going to talk about, well, I'm just going to save it. I'll mention it when we introduce our guest, because this is something that I found that there's such a lack of knowledge in, and every paranormal investigator should have a baseline knowledge of what we're going to talk about tonight. So, especially those of us who run into unique or negative situations, very, very important. But first off, I want to thank everybody who came out for the class that I taught at Ivy Rivera's Psychic Academy in Williamsville. I actually dusted off my books and taught a subject that I love, which was seance. I just love talking about it. I love doing seance. To me, it's so fascinating, because so many people, they kind of do it, but they really don't go all the way. And, you know, the bottom line is, of course, you're looking for two-way communication, but you're actually looking through it not in a mediumistic Svengali thing where, you know, all these vibrations are hitting your head and you know, the medium starts rolling out some pablum out of their mouths, but communication through physical phenomena. And, I mean, you know, we get table tipping, and anybody can do table tipping, but we'd like to do something even deeper. So, I mean, it was really great. Now, I know it was a 101 class, but I'm hoping that the students that came to the class, which I was really humbled that so many showed up, because, I would talk in a street corner. But so many showed up, and I'm hoping that they walked away with a greater understanding of why and how and the reverence of it. So I think it was great. So thanks a lot, Ivy Rivera and Reverend Sean. I really do appreciate that. Hey, and well, I got to tell you guys something. We have a special guest in our studio today. It's none other than the co-producer, director, cameraman, and general jack of all trades of the upcoming series. What is it?
Curiosity.
And we have the famous Leo Medico. Hey, Leo. Tell everybody a little bit about it. Leo stopped by tonight because he wanted to see how the sumptuous Shaw studio actually operates, and he was thrilled when he saw that there were baling wire and a lot of duct tape. But tell everybody what the curiosity is all about.
Well, hopefully it will be about a lot of different things for a lot of different people. But for me, I would say it's about hidden gems and finding those hidden gems and introducing those hidden gems to everyone.
I think it's going to be great. And this weekend, we're heading up to some kind. What event are we heading up to on Saturday?
It's the 5th annual Steampunk Festival at the Leonard Oaks Winery.
That's pretty cool, because I've always enjoyed steampunk and I've always enjoyed wine. So it's a win-win situation for us. And Leo may be driving home that day. But on Sunday, we're going to the Letchworth State Park, and we're going to film at the annual Primitives Stone Tool Days. And it's pretty neat because, I mean, these people recreate objects of everyday usage 3,000 to 5,000 years old. So it's going to be great. So we have an action-packed week. When are we sleeping? Do you have a tent or anything, or are we just sleeping in the car in the parking lot someplace?
I think I have a full umbrella we can sleep under.
No, we're definitely in trouble then. Okay, Leo. Hey, I gotta just do a quick, real quick self-promotion here. If anybody wants to know more about what's going on in the world of the lounge, or wants to see where we are, where we're going, events that are going on, come to the website, www.theblackcatlounge.net. That's www.theblackcatlounge.net. Make sure you put the THE in there, because why else? You'll go to a porno site in Austin, Texas. And I believe Leo has been there once or twice. But we won't ask it, because we're not going to go and check his credit cards, okay? Anyway, our guest tonight is someone who I met many, many moons ago. And I will tell you, I was impressed by his knowledge and dedication to the world of the paranormal. I mean, there's a lot of fly-by-nights out there. There really is. And we're seeing that now as the entertainment field is starting to wane. And now you're going to start seeing the hardcore people stand out. The hardcore people that are going to stay and work with it. Chris is also someone who, like myself, works in the public sector. But he's one of those guys, those unsung guys that doesn't get enough praise, because he is both a firefighter and a paramedic, along with a Marine Corps veteran. So I'm just so impressed. He's also the director of Tri-City Paranormal. And I got to tell you guys, his approach to the investigation of the paranormal is rather unique in the fact that he looks for markers that, and guys, again, please don't shoot me, but this is just an observation that I see most paranormal investigators miss. And that is the medical aspect of occurring, you know, what happens when phenomena occurs. Listen, gang, I hear every para group out there spouting off about how medical issues can produce hallucinations and such stuff, and I'm going to stretch it out there, but I believe 99.9% of those people don't understand anything about the actual topic, and they're just mimicking something that they heard on TV. So I want to introduce someone who really knows this stuff, someone whom I respect, because he is one of the most knowledgeable people that I have ever met in this field. So without further ado, let's welcome to the Black Cat Lounge the one and only Mr. Chris Balsone. I got his name right.
You did.
Hey, man. How you doing, brother?
How's it going?
You know what? I am so thrilled. I've been so jazzed up all day that you're going to come on the show. And as a matter of fact, Leo relinquished at the bar here the fake zebra skin bar stool of love, and now Chris is sitting on it right now, whether he knows it or not. And it is a special seat. I mean, many people have sat on it, so this is an honor, and it's an honor for me that you came on tonight.
It's an honor for me as well.
Well, this is great. Well, you know what? First off, I met you quite a few years ago up at the Lake George Paracon. And, I'll be honest with you, I get a chance to chat with you once in a while, and I do stalk you on social media, because why? I'm that type of guy, man. And
that's why I did the same thing to you, so you know.
Oh, well, that's okay, but what scared me was both you and Leo jumped at the fact that this is Pants Optional Thursdays, and Leo is sitting here in his Scooby-Doo boxer shorts, and I don't even want to know what you're wearing. So, Listen, basically, you seem like a normal guy. You're an everyday guy. When I met you, you're just the type of guy that I would hang around with, because I mean, you're funny, but you're right to the point. You know when to be serious, you know when not to be serious. That being said, I got to ask you, what sparked your interest in the paranormal? Because I'm very interested in my guests' backstories. So what was it that really got you like just amped up and wanting to go and investigate this crazy stuff?
Well, it started when I was 14 years old. I lived with my grandmother in a townhouse, and my mother had a townhouse too, over in town. And my grandfather had died when I was 3 years old, and we were really close. So here I am, I'm 14. I'm watching TV one night at my grandmother's house, and I noticed the dog acting kind of funny, and I looked at his chair in the corner of the room, and my grandfather is sitting there. And it took me by surprise, thinking maybe I'm just hallucinating, seeing something else. And he stood up, he smiled, he turned, he walked, and went to the wall and disappeared. And no longer did that happen. I was out of the house, at my mother's house, underneath the desk, freaking out. Of course, they didn't believe me until I said, look, this is how he was sitting. This is how this. And they're like, exactly. That's how he dressed. That's how he sat. She really didn't see him. So after that, I had, you know, little things happen here and there, and I really didn't want to believe in it, because at that time I was young and scared of crap out of me. And as I got older, I got more interested in it, going, wow, this is actually kind of cool. And I'll be one of those ones, to be honest with you. One day I'm sitting around watching TV. Ghost Hunters came on when it first came on, and I went, oh my God, people actually do this. And that started my venture to find a team that does this. And after a couple of shots, I found a team that I now direct and own.
Now, Chris, I gotta ask you this. Your interest in the effects of the physiological and medical issues upon clients and investigators alike, when they experience frightening occurrences, do you feel that in many cases, or most cases, this might be an overreaction, or do you think that this is something more that is more primal in our physiology?
Well, it's funny that you say that. When somebody gets frightened, it starts up your fight or flight response. When that fight or flight response, which is, you know, physiological, once that is activated, all of your rational thinking stops. So if you're scared enough, you're not going to try to sit there and figure out, okay, what was that? Is there something? It just stops and you run. You're either fighting it or you're running. So it is a physiological thing, as well as kind of a psychological thing. If you're not trained enough, if you don't do this on a normal basis like we do, and you're coming in to see it and see if it really is, and it scares you, then yes, it's going to be a physiological and psychological reaction that you're going to have. And that's going to be run.
And that's a natural one, because you know what? People mock me out because of the fact that I always kid them. I say, listen, if you see me running, try to keep up. But in all honesty, I mean, I'll be honest with you. When you first see something for myself, and I've been doing this a long time, it doesn't bother me. It's when my logical mind kicks in, and then later on, that looping that every horror movie that I ever saw comes into play. The fight or flight is something that is instinctual within I believe all mammals, and it's a survival instinct. Do you think that some people are more hyperactive to fight or flight, or do you think that it's kind of even across the board, and it's discipline or it's a personal, you know, emotional composure of that individual that kind of controls them better than others?
I believe everybody has a different level at where their fight or flight reaction will take effect. I also believe, because I have been, you know, a person to do it, where you can train it. When I first started in this field, I'll never forget it. We went to a place that the only place that we've been haunted where I live, and it's still our training ground. I looked and saw some shadow like ducking down, and I knew I saw it. And I was like, you know, this is what I wanted to do. I have to go check that out. But my body's saying, absolutely not. You're not going anywhere near. So I had to force myself to go over there. Because, you know, I told myself, this is what you want to do. This is your passion. You have to go find out what that is. So you can train yourself to think logically before you run. It does take a while, and it does happen, though.
Do you think that you become more numb to these situations the more that you're exposed to it? Or do you think it's just something that you sit there and you seriously really force yourself to withstand this shock?
You know, I actually believe that you become more in tune with it.
Oh, that's interesting.
I think you become more, because when I first started this, I would just walk in and just have like no knowledge, no awareness of what was going on. The more I did it, I could walk into a room and feel the change. So if I guess what it is, once you're more in tune, okay, something's changed. So now you're aware that something is possible that's going to happen. So it's not going to cut your fight or flight on. You're waiting for it to happen.
I run into so many people that are terrified of the paranormal. And I often think that, I used to think poorly of them, I'm going to be honest with you, because I used to think that, well, you know, they're just here for a thrill ride. They love, you know, they should just go to a roller coaster or amusement park someplace and get it out of their system. But the longer I stay in this field, the more I understand that human curiosity, for a lack of a better word, is something that drives people to know. And these are truth seekers. And the more people are exposed to it, I guess the better they can handle it. Now, hey, you know what? I got to ask you this, because I've handled quite a few cases where the individuals involved were a little, how can I say this without getting, like, you know, hate mail? Unhinged? Would that be a proper way of saying it?
You're just going to get hate mail, so go for it.
Thank you. And it'll be from Leo. But what are some of the markers? What are those red flags that you look for when you interview a witness or a client for possible medical issues or mental instability?
Well, first off, a lot of them aren't going to be upfront with you. You'll catch them in lies. If you talk to them long enough, we always do an interview before we actually come out and investigate, because I'm able to be face to face with the person before we have to bring out a whole team, get everything set up, and I'll be able to tell within 30 minutes if they really believe there's something there, or if they're just attention seeking, or want to have a team out to have a gun party or whatever like that, or because they'll change their story, even minutely, but they'll change their story. They're not going to tell you if they're on any medications, which actually what I have done now is when I go in to investigate, I bring in a liability form, a confidentiality form, and a medical history form. And of course, put a thing at the bottom that says, this is just for our research only, and we'll go no further than what this is. I want to know the medicines, and I want to know the history. That's twofold. Either they're going to tell me, which means that they're being honest, and what I can do is look up those medications or know what those problems are to see if some of this could be causing it. Or they're going to lie to me, and yes, I know it sounds bad, but you can't say that nobody else has done it. You go through their medicine cabinet, and you'll find what they really have. A lot of people, they've been doing that forever, but the thing is, a lot of people just look at it and go, okay, well, I'll kind of look it up and sort of know what it does. It's good to know a full aspect of it. It could be this medication is contraindicating this one, and they're taking it together, and all this stuff's happening. You know, so to be honest with you, a lot of them, I think, is when the red flags come up to me is when they say, I'm having a demonic thing, it's doing this, 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 and this. I've had this team in, this team, this, this team, this team, and this team. Once you've had like four or five teams come in, flags are flying, I'll come out and talk to you, but those, a lot of times I'm thinking there's more something else going on.
Absolutely.
Psychologically.
Absolutely. You know, Chris, I promised to tell you the refrigerator story. Years and years and years ago when I first started out, we got called in to a home along the Erie Canal, and the home, there was all this stuff going on, and the woman really seemed genuinely frazzled. She had bruises, scratch marks. Her daughter was really concerned. She was claiming that in the middle of the night she was being raped by an incubus, and all this stuff. Now, I didn't ask the right questions. I didn't ask, well, about medicines. I didn't ask about other groups or anything that had come in, and we had gone there and nothing. There was nothing. Drove away, got a frantic call, something's going on, drove back, nothing happened. It wasn't until the team set up DVRs that we saw what was going on. The middle of the night, woman get up and run into the refrigerator. She'd run into her refrigerator. She would drive her head into the refrigerator. She would, literally, she was injuring herself. And at that point, we kind of got a hold of the daughter and said, listen, you know, this is what we got. You got to do something to help your mom. And what we found out was that it was a combination of medications for dementia. And these are things that people don't ever think about. The problem is too many people, too many investigators, they want to believe the client too, you know, so much. They want to help them because they're bred on, you know, the adage, well, we're here to help you. We're here to help. That usually includes we're here because we believe everything you say. And that can be dangerous because not only could it be dangerous to the client, but it could also be kind of dangerous to you, because if you have somebody that's mentally unhinged, in this day and age, it doesn't take much for them to snap and pull a gun on you or something of that nature.
Absolutely.
Now, I got a quick question from the chat room.
Sure.
What effects do brain tumors or even chemotherapy have on the person who may be experiencing phenomena?
I actually had a case with that. who had a, not so much of a tumor, but it was a cyst that would push on her spinal cord and parts of her brain. And she said she had been having all these, you know, things going on in her house and smells and stuff like that. And I came in and I explained, here's what I do. And she says, oh my God, I never put the two together. Whenever I have headaches is when it starts to build up the pressure. That's when things will start to happen. So absolutely, tumors can have a major part on it. If it pushes on any part of the brain, your olfactory for your smelling, or your sight, so you just either start seeing things or you can just go blind. You know, things like that, absolutely, they can have a lot to do with the activity, or so be it.
Now, let me ask you this, with drug interactions. First off, just how common is it? Now, the reason I'm asking it, because doctors often seem reluctant to ever take you off meds that have been prescribed by other doctors. And I mean, I personally experienced this several times in my own surgeries, in my own personal medical life, thus causing, let's face it, it causes a waste of money and possible harm for the patient. How common is this and I'm going to just throw it right out there, physician negligence?
Well, now, you look at it as physician negligence. They're going to look at it as this. I'm not going to take you off this medicine that this doctor prescribed because there's something, if I do and something happens, that doctor is no longer liable. I am. I'm not touching it. So they're kind of covering their own butt, so to say, not to take it off. But it is very common for somebody to be on what they call polypharmacy, or a lot of different drugs. I believe, and this is my opinion, everybody has them, I believe it's no longer taking care of the patient anymore. It's just keep putting drugs. Well, let's put them on this. Well, it causes that. So let's put on this drug to cause that. And they get over-medicated, and a lot of it causes paranormal. A lot of it causes other medical issues. I think a lot of times if you step back, take some of them off, everything can subside.
See, exactly, and that's something where people, I mean, I'm a big proponent of don't be a self-created victim, and I'm a big proponent of, you know, so long as you can do it, take control and understand what they're giving you and ask 1,001 questions, and if you don't ask them in the office, write them down and call the office when you get a chance, because people think that doctors are, they're almost like gods, they know everything. And the truth is they're humans just like the rest of us. And you're right. I mean, sometimes they're afraid to take you off, especially with all the malpractice suits that are lodged. I mean, the doctors I used to work for, $150,000, $200,000 in insurance. So I can understand that. Hey, let's stay on this subject because of the fact that this is something else that really people don't understand. Let's talk about the HIPAA laws and HIPAA regulations. How do you work within these boundaries? Because as a medium myself, I am not allowed to prescribe or diagnose. So correct. Under HIPAA, it's you got to watch this. How do you work under, you know, within those boundaries and still stay legally safe?
For the paranormal aspect, easy. I'm not charging any money. HIPAA stands for Health Insurance Privacy and Portability Act. I'm not taking any money, so therefore there's really no interaction medically. I'm not diagnosing. I'm not doing anything. This is on a paranormal aspect, so HIPAA doesn't even relate. So, and when I ask for medicines and medical, you know, any diagnosis, that's voluntary. They don't have to give it to me. And if they do, it states, look, this is a confidentiality agreement. This goes nowhere else. That's about as far as mine goes.
See, this is something, again, people have to understand. Before you do anything like this, understand the laws that govern everything around. You have to know what you can do and what you can't do. And that's so important. And I know a lot of teams just jump in, unfortunately, and don't do it. I got a chat room question for you, Chris. How often do you feel that medical issues are a part of a reoccurring haunting?
It depends on all the surrounding issues that are going on. It's kind of hard to say unless it's, you know, it's case by case. You know, there could be okay, we come in, we think it's medicine, they change it, they go to their doctor, they get a change, you come back, and it's still happening. Okay, well, if there's something you don't know, I mean, to fully say, yes, it's medicines or medical, you'd have to go in through CT scans, MRIs, brain scans, EEGs, and they're not going to spend that money just for the stuff. So I can't really say for a certain how many of them could be from reoccurring cases from medicines.
Tonight on the phone, we have the wonderful, the informative, and probably one of the most dedicated paranormal investigators that I have had the opportunity to meet and know, Chris Balasone. And I am just so thrilled that he's here tonight on the Black Cat Lounge, sitting on the zebra skin stool of love and information. We're going to throw that in there because it's not just all love. You're giving us a lot of information. Now, I have another question. And this Coraline is in chat room, and she's enthralled with what you're saying. And she wants to know about K2s. Now, let me just say, preface this by, like, listen, we've all been taught, mostly by the TV shows, about the effects of EMF on the body and the brain. So I'm going to throw this out to you. I've done research with it. I've actually had a little bit of experience with it. But I want you to tell us if there's any truth to it, and if there is truth to it, what are some of the dangers that we really have to look out for?
Okay, so if everybody's watched the shows and you've heard of the electromagnetic hypersensitivity, it is true, and depending on how hypersensitive you are, and depending on how old the house is, and if your wires aren't shielded very well and it is leaking out, then yes, you can get headaches, nausea, vomiting, hallucinations, feeling, you know, paranoia, feeling of being watched, rashes, I mean, all that, it can happen. It really can happen.
This is something that I know within the scope of my own investigations. I've had two really nasty EMF cases, and in both of them, it involved hypersensitivity to EMF. And these people, the children especially, started to go, and they started to get what they call hot, almost like, it looks like almost a hive, and they were starting to get headaches and. They would take them to the doctor, and the doctor couldn't. They do blood work, whatever. They couldn't figure out what it was. And when we went in there, the EMF in two spots on both cases were just off the wall. And the kids' room was actually on a second floor where all the power came in. All your service lines came in. It pinned. We were 6 feet away. It was pinning. And we recommended, before you do anything, let's have an electrician come in here and check it out. And sure enough, they had it. They had the service line replaced. Do you know within 3 weeks, those kids, all the hives, what, they had no headaches? That's amazing. Yep. Now, I know that there was a study that was done in Poland about high levels of EMF and cancer. And I got to tell you, it's very, very convincing. And when Mrs. Rev and I were actually looking for a house, we almost bought one near high voltage lines, and then we decided not to because of that, just because of that alone. Yeah. And it was, you have to watch that. So EMF can mimic in so many different ways. And speaking about, let's talk about another organic problem. Carbon dioxide, carbon monoxide, I mean, that stuff is nasty business. Have you ever...
Absolutely.
Yeah, what happens with that? Because I know... I mean, we've actually had several instances where people have died here in Western New York because of it. What can that... you know, how can that affect the person who's living with it?
Carbon monoxide is deadly. And the worst part about it is it's odorless and it's tasteless. Everybody that's supposed to have a system... We take carbon monoxide detectors on all our investigations. And, of course, you set it low because it's heavier than air. The problem is that, again, you know, it's odorless and tasteless. It can start taking over your body. It's about 100 times more powerful than oxygen on your red blood cells. So it'll take over the oxygen. You'll start hallucinating. You know, you'll have headaches. Once you get to a toxicity level, your face will start turning cherry red. After that, it's not long before it's going to be irreversible.
What would you suggest for people who are suffering from this? I mean, there's all sorts of meters, and there's all sorts of alarms, and that you said it should be placed low. So many people that I've seen have placed them up in on the ceilings in basements. Should we keep them lower?
Yeah, they should be, you know, where usually your electrical sockets are.
Right.
That's why a lot of them are electric. You plug them into the walls because they sit low. Because, again, carbon monoxide is heavier than air, so it's going to sit low. Now, after a while of building up, obviously, it will grow. It will get higher, but that's going to be after a long time. So it's usually coming from, like, the space heaters, the chimneys, stuff right. like that is where it will come from, garages. So, yeah, you definitely need to keep them, you know, within 2 to 3 feet from the ground, either from the ground up to about 2 to 3 feet.
I've got another chat room question. Thank you, everybody, for sending the chat room's questions in. It really means a lot to me, and I know that Chris loves the interaction. Now, we all know about the common tools, like, you know, the trade, like K2s and Squawk Box. Oh, I mean, ITC technology. Those things just give me the worst headache in the world. Yeah, it doesn't have to be medical. I just can't stand them. But, you know, other stuff like that. But what I'm interested in, what do you guys take medically and medically orientated when you go on an investigation and you know, just to check clients and investigators?
Well, a lot of times what we do nowadays is it's for our own investigator experience. Especially when we're doing the research, I'll take a pulse oximeter that checks your oxygen saturation and your pulse. We'll take an automatic blood pressure cuff, and I also have a portable EKG, electrocardiogram, so that you can check your heart rate at certain levels. There are times where I'm actually able to get an actual heart monitor, the one that we carry in the ambulances, and take that with us. And the reason why, because I've had this happen to me. And here's a question I pose. This is my research side of things. I was in a place, in a building that we were investigating. I was hooked myself up to the EKG machine, waiting for it to settle. I ran about 70 beats a minute, no problem. I got up, moved, sat down, waiting for it to go down to the baseline. Went back down to 70. And we're just sitting there, and, you know, nothing's really going on. I feel perfectly fine. All of a sudden, I hear it beeping faster, and I look down, and my heart rate's gone to 100. I haven't moved at all. Nothing's changed. I feel comfortable. So that's when it posed a question. What if the energy or the subconscious of me realizes that there's something else there, and it's automatically sending my body into a fight or flight reaction? Without me consciously understanding what's going on.
That's interesting. That's very interesting. Have you ever done this with like a psychic or a medium?
No, I have not.
Next time I'm in Virginia, hook me up.
Okay, absolutely.
I'll gladly do it. Because this is something that's very, very interesting to me. Because what I've found is that I know if I enter a certain state of trance or something that may be akin to a deeper meditation, everything shuts down. Mm. Everything starts to get very, very, very low. And I know when I'm doing a walkthrough in some of these locations, I can feel when I'm bird dogging. Because why? Right. I like to be in my bed by midnight, and I just do a walkthrough, and I record what are my feelings, and I give it to the investigator, and I go home. But What I've noticed, Chris, is that my heart starts beating a little bit quicker. I might even like sweat a little bit when I get into a charged atmosphere. So I'd be thrilled to find out about that. Hey, I got another question from the chat room. I'm trying to get to everybody's question. What are the effects of high levels of static electricity at a location? And I know that high levels of static electricity usually feeds into phenomena. And I know that because of certain times of the year here in Western New York up at Old Fort Niagara that it was more active than others, and that's when there were higher levels of static electricity. But on the human body, is there any effect of high levels of the static electricity?
Not really that I've been able to see, only because you're usually shock people. That's how you discharge when you get high levels of electricity. Or static electricity. So So, unfortunately, I don't think there's any correlation to the two, because once you get to that high level, all you got to do is, if you're standing up or something, you touch something, boom, and it discharges. It's gone. So, I've never really done any studies on static electricity itself. But my thought, like I said, again, my opinion, my thought is that once you get to a high level, you usually, you know, you run your feet, you shock somebody, you're discharging it. So
there's really nothing to really be worried about except the stray.
No, because there's no long time. Yeah, there's no long term that is on your body. It always, you know, again, all you do is touch something. You touch something all the time, so it discharges it all the time.
Now, here's something that I got to hit you up with, and this comes under your paramedic training. I was always told that, like, when we did Reiki healing or we did spiritual healing, we became a heavy channel, which is a trance worker for spirit, that our sugar levels will dip. And I have to say that after I work a session, if I do a gallery session and I take my readings, my levels are low. I mean, they're low, and, you know, and I usually jazz them up by eating like grapes or something like that. Is this very common? Is this something that you ever run into, that people that may have been exposed to paranormal activity, their insulin and the sugar to glucose levels start to drop?
Well, here's what I can say. They do have a new thing coming out where it can check your sugar non-invasively. In other words, you don't have to stick your finger or anything like that. And I'm looking at getting one like that just to check that, because I'll take it really far and try to make it understandable. Your body's made of energy, right? It's called, and to keep your body moving, it needs energy. Well, what makes that energy is sugar. So if you're using a lot of energy, you're going to spend a lot of the sugar that you have. So if you can kind of correlate that, yes, it would make sense that if you use a lot of your energy or something like that, yes, your sugar is going to drop some.
See, that makes perfect sense. And I'm glad that I had the opportunity to speak to you about that, because I know that some of my students have felt this time and time again. And I know that the master teacher that I worked with and that I was certified with Reiki always warned me of it. But it wasn't until I discovered that I was a diabetic that I knew anything really about it. I knew that I was kind of felt a little bit depleted, but I mean, that was it. So yeah, this makes sense, and I'm gonna have to go and look into the into that new device, because I am really getting tired of pricking my finger. But that's just neither here nor there.
Yeah,
I got another question from the chat room.
Sure.
When interviewing a client, and you're a professional, so when interviewing a client, how important is it to have a good bedside manner?
It's always... I'm taking that the person did the medical review because they said bedside manner. So I'm looking at it from a professional aspect. You have to be very professional, very understanding, and very caring, no matter what you are when you're in this field. You're out there to help people. And like I tell everybody that we go to, look, you've called us, you have now have us for life. We will help you at any point in time. My phone is always on. You know, but on that level, I want you to know, I am going to come up with answers, whether it be what you want to hear or what you don't want to hear. I'm going to give you the answers. So it's absolutely important to have a good bedside manner, because that's being professional. And you know as well as I do, being professional, courteous, and those kind of things, and respected in this field is all you have.
Exactly.
It's your reputation. If you ruin your reputation, hang it up, because you're done.
And you know as well as I do, we don't make a ton of money doing this. we all got day jobs, no. Man.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh my God. Yeah, because reputation in this is paramount. You get a bad reputation, you're done. Nobody will ever call you again. They won't invite you anywhere. And you know, that's it. You might as well go back and collect stamps. Of course, I collect stamps, but that's because I'm a nerd, because that's the only... Hey, I got to ask you this. and this is something that I know is my pet peeve, the importance of knowing how your equipment works, whether it be medical or paranormal or whatever, and how to actually work and use it properly. Do you find that when you investigate with other groups, other individuals, you find that a lot of times they have no clue what they're doing? They're just trying to emulate what they see on TV?
Yes. A lot of times they get the equipment because it makes cool, has cool lights, makes cool sounds. Great. Do you really understand what it's for? Do you understand why it works that way? For instance, and I'm probably going to make people mad, but you know what? Sorry.
Welcome to my club. Hey, Chris, you're in real good hands. You are one of the brothers now. If you don't get at least two negative emails from this show, I don't know what. We missed the boat.
So, the K2 meter, a lot of people use to communicate. The problem with it is the K2 meter, you've seen it on TV shows. What they don't realize is those TV shows that first started using it is because they said, well, let's see if it works. Yes, it works to find out if there's electricity, if there's EMF fields. Trying to communicate, I'm not feeling it. I don't use it for that.
What do you use the K2?
I do use a RIM pod. We use a digital EMFs.
Right.
I'm working on getting a tri-field meter. But the K2, we still keep it in our toolbox. We still break it out. You know, I like to play with it every once in a while, but most of the time I just use it just to try to see if I'm finding EMF field somewhere.
See,
that was specifically built for was for electricians. Now, a lot of the new equipment like the RIM pod and stuff are more geared towards paranormal, but the K2 was immediately built for electricians.
Exactly, and that's what drives me insane. I've got one of the world's oldest K2s here. That was modified and put in a box and has a switch and this whole thing. And I'm going to be honest with you, I don't use K2s almost at all. I love that. I've used tri-field meter for years, mm-hmm. and that is an amazing piece of equipment. But again, you've got to sit down and understand how it works, because you could pick up human electrical currents and frequencies, and people don't realize that. So I mean, this is something you have to be very, very careful with what we do. Chris, I gotta thank you for coming on, but before I throw you out of the lounge, because why? It's almost closing time, and my little sister Marla Brooks, who's the barmaid, is really, you know, she's 4'5" and she's walking around with 6-inch heels on and they're bothering her feet, so we have to close early. But I want you to go and tell everybody how to get a hold of you, how to get a hold of you guys for cases, to learn more about the effects of the medical field on the paranormal field itself. Where are you going to be speaking? Where are you going to be hanging out? And most importantly, why you're one of the cool dudes that I love to hang with.
Well, I guess I'm one of the cool dudes because I'll tell you how it is, whether good, bad, or indifferent.
That's what you have to do. You have to be like that, man. You have to do it. Anytime, Chris, you and I open our mouths, we put our heads on the chopping block. Somebody will like it, somebody doesn't like it. And you know what? Yeah. You have to be true, and you can't play popular opinion.
Yeah. And the one thing I always like to say in a lot of my lectures is, yes, I bring the medical aspect in. I also do the scientific. I believe that there needs to be a full holistic circle. You need to have religion, the scientific, the medical, and the psychical, if you will, all together in one to come up with a true answer.
It's the right way to do it.
So,
and people, unfortunately, they just don't understand that it has to be in balance. Everything must be in balance. But where the hell are you going to be appearing, and how can they get a hold of you?
Well, as of right now, I don't have anything scheduled, but if you want me to be scheduled, you can go to idealeventmanage.com. I am obviously represented by Ideal Event Management, as you know.
I might know a little something about that.
Yes?
That damn Tetlow. Go ahead.
Oh, you said you might know something about that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Other than that, you can find me at TriCityParanormal.com. I'm on Facebook, Chris Dollison, or you can find me, we have a Facebook, Tri-City Paranormal as well. So I'm everywhere.
This is an honor to have you on the show today. It really is, because, again, you're touching a field that people just gloss over, and so many of the paranormal investigators just take everything that is told to them, you know, at face value. Mm-hmm. And people don't realize that there is so much more. There's so much that has to be understood. And I'm going to tell you what, Chris, tonight was hugely informational. And this was a smackdown you gave to a couple listeners tonight. It really was great. And you know what, people, I really think you should try to be more like Chris, because Chris is not only dedicated and focused, but he is a true professional. And he's somebody that you really should go to when you have a question within this field, because there's just so much out there that we don't understand. And if we're to be truth seekers, let's be honest. Let's get to the truth. Let's not let physiology, let's not let drug interactions, let's not let natural phenomena go and taint that truth. Chris, I want to thank you so much for coming on tonight.
You.
It was so great. And it's great to talk to you again, man. This has been way too long. We got to meet someplace like in Pennsylvania and just hang out.
Absolutely. Sounds like a plan.
That sounds good. I'll actually even buy the first beer. Leo here just held his chest because he knows how tight my wallet is. But I'd buy the first beer.
That sounds good.
Chris, you have a wonderful evening. Thank you, thank you, thank you once again for being a guest here on the Black Cat Lounge. And we're going to be working up something, guys, in the future. And I'll have Chris back on. I'm going to work on getting a round table together to talk about the proper ways of doing paranormal investigations. And I know if I send Chris a dollar and a dream, he'll be here. Right, Chris?
Absolutely.
You have a wonderful night. Thank you again.
You too.
Bye-bye. And that, my friends, was Chris Bellison, and I mean, it's a very, very thought-provoking subject. So many people don't realize it. So many people take it for granted that, you know, everything that people say is the truth. Everything, you know, oh no, drugs won't go and interact in different ways. Everybody understands. Everybody has had that person in their family that has had that bad drug interaction where they've actually become incoherent or forgetful or even ended up in a hospital or almost died. Everybody I've ever talked to has had this. So I want to make sure that everybody out there just takes the time, just takes a couple extra minutes to go and, when you're interviewing a client, find out their history. Find out what's going on. Find out the medical. Too many people out there are afraid. They're embarrassed to ask somebody's medical history. I mean, after all the stuff that I've gone through, all the surgeries and the invasive testing and stuff, I'm not ashamed anymore, because if somebody can ask me, and hell, I'll show them where the scar tissue is, you know? For Christmas this year, I'm going to go and I'm going to have pictures of the inside of my bladder put out on the Yuletide card so I can send to all my best friends. But no, seriously, I mean, don't be ashamed of it, because you're here for one reason. You're here when you investigate to help people. So please, everybody do that. Hey, guys, listen. And speaking about thought-provoking subjects and stuff, anyone who has had anything to do with social media knows that it can be a wasteland of mental... Well, best the way I can describe it is mental garbage and trash. Really, think about it. Spirit kind of slapped me in the back of the head and said, hey, dude, listen, that's not the way it really, really is. And I thought, why? What are you talking about? What are you talking about? And Spirit said, hey, listen, this is the way it works. It's only garbage if you allow it to be. If you allow this stuff to impact your life. If you allow somebody else's negativity to come out and pull you down, guys. Remember that. Remember that. Spirit tells you every day that you breathe that you have free will. So damn it, use it. Use it! You have the free will to filter out what's on social media or just shut it off. The choice is yours. Just make it. That's all you have to do, is just make it. This has been Tim Shaw, and you've been listening to the Black Cat Lounge here on the Para X Empire and WJGK, hailing from the real capital of where else? Sloan, New York. So until next time, my good friends, do good works. Don't be a self-created victim. And what else? Until next week, I'll see you all where else in the cheap seats. And I just want to thank everybody out there who sent positive wishes and sent donations to dog rescue centers and people who bought dog beds in local rescue centers and sent gifts to us and cards on the passing of our dog Ebony. And it really meant a lot to us, and I want to thank each and every one of you.
You have been listening to the Black Cat Lounge on the Para X Radio Network. Para-X.com